The president was greeted by veteran Soviet ambassador
to offer condolences on the death of Leonid Brezhnev.
The operation is what's crucial, because what we do is for the good of the many. Don't let your conscience get us killed.
If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make.
Hi, Jamie. How's it going?
Hey, Mike. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hang up on you.
That's okay. It happens all the time. All right, Jamie. Well, we're here to do the day after 409 on the Americans on West Coast Project.
Yep.
Jamie, have you ever watched the movie The Day After?
I think I may have seen it in the 1990s. I think they replayed it, or they played one similar to it. I just remember being horrified by it. I saw something, and it was awful. It was really, really, really frightening. And I think they did such a great portrayal of people's attitudes at the time that movie showed.
Yeah, I got the same answer. I can't remember if I've seen it, but I think I've seen parts of it, because it did the little scenes from this show reminded me of what was in it.
Right.
So it looked a little familiar.
And I thought the special effects were really good.
But Jamie, they did it again. They referenced the Munchkins, even though that's the next episode, in this one ahead of time.
Yeah, weird.
Stan references it later on in the episode.
Yeah, when they're playing handball or whatever they're playing.
Racquetball.
Okay, there you go.
And Jamie, good God, Oleg and Tatiana.
What in the world? It sounded like porn. We had two situations that sounded like porn this episode.
Well, you might have gotten them confused with actually being porn.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely a different side of Oleg and Tatiana.
There was also this is the second incident of appointment TV. We saw last week that David Copperfield, where everyone had to be ready to watch that special at that time.
That's
and then
right.
This one, the day after, everybody was watching it.
That's right.
Pretty interesting. Now nobody has appointment TV. No such thing anymore, really.
It ended with Friends.
Appointment TV?
Yeah.
Maybe with Lost.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because Lost came on before there was really DVRs probably emerged during the Lost run. I can't even remember.
I can't either.
I never watched Lost until afterwards.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, so did you manage to avoid all the hype so that you wouldn't be spoiled?
I had no hype, no spoil, nothing. I watched it way later, like years later.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay, Jamie, we'll start the episode here. Philip needs to go back to full-time spying to get away from the stress of teaching Paige how to drive, I think.
Right. Yeah, so he got a message that he had to go and meet William, but it didn't come through Gabriel. So now I'm wondering where Gabriel is, because we've had several references in this episode to Gabriel, but he's nowhere around.
He's clearly in the trunk of that Camaro. Yeah, I don't know where Gabriel is. But this driving scene was pretty touching, this little scene with Philip and Paige.
Yeah, I liked it.
And he teases her right away. Okay, now put your foot on the brake. Put your hands at 10 and 2. Okay, that's enough for today. Let's go back inside.
Right.
She is wound up tight as a drum, though. She needs his humor, I think.
Yeah, she's stressed out. She takes after her mom.
She wants to drive that Camaro, though, not that old Battle Axe LTD or whatever that thing is.
Exactly.
Philip's actually a pretty good teacher, I think. He's keeps her calm and gives her good instructions, and he's calm.
Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because he's somebody who has to behave properly for a living.
Yeah, so, Jamie, what did you think of this episode? Let's go back and kind of reboot that. What did you think of this episode?
Oh, well, okay, so my thought for the last probably year and a half was spoiled, because I really did not like this episode.
Oh, you did not like it. Well, what was spoiled?
Well, I've been saying that it gets better and better, like, as time goes.
Oh, the streak is broken?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, this one was...
What didn't you like about it?
Well, it was just so disturbing. You know, I hate what happened with Elizabeth, and I just can't stand Pastor Tim, and he was in there, and I don't know, it just, the feeling was so bad, and, you know, I've talked on occasion about how Elizabeth is sort of easy to dislike. Well, I think this season is kind of an anomaly in that sort of line of, like, seasons where, you know, it's very easy to dislike her because, you know, she's really softened up this season, and I just felt really horrible for her. And we can talk about it when we get to that section of the show, but it was, I felt terrible for her.
Yeah, I can go by how I like the episode by the kind of notes I write about the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And if I like, you know, if I take a lot of notes, I like the episode usually. I think I can hate the characters and still like the episode. I don't like the characters doing repetitive, predictable things, though. Like, I got a little tired of Martha.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you're right about Tim. Like, I don't even know why he even can think he can offer advice. We're going to have to sit down and talk about this when I'm up. Like, dude, you're one trigger pull away from eternity.
Yeah, and I like that. But, he's just so annoying. He's one of those people who's kind of, you know, he thinks he's in charge. He buys his own hype.
Right. And he has one of those false, what do they call it, paper tiger power positions. He's a minister. What power do you really have? You get young, confused people that look up to you, maybe. But... All right, well, let's continue on. Patty Elizabeth and Young He are in the kitchen talking about kids. And it's the talk, like, why do kids always ask why about everything? That's their typical friendly comparing notes as mom talks, or as women, I guess, talks. And ironically, Elizabeth asks or says, my mom was tough too.
Uh-huh.
Which she sure as heck probably was.
Yeah, probably. Now, that's her fictional mother that she's talking about, I think. But yeah, her mother was about as tough as they come.
But as usual, Young He is doing like all the talking, most of the talking.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks a little bit about her and Don about being too soft as parents, I think is what the gist of that was. And then Don passes through the room to go deal with the kids as they talk about that.
Yeah, Young He was saying that whenever her mother leaves town, that the kids go crazy and they keep asking why. Why do I have to wear that? Why do I have to do that? And she said her mom's really tough. And when her mom's in town, the kids are perfectly behaved. And when she's not, you know, that she and Don are too soft on them. They just tell them you're going to be punished from TV or something. And so it doesn't work. And so they were just talking about that stuff.
So she was saying, she was telling Elizabeth that her mother, the grandmother.
Right.
Was tough on her kids.
Right.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't get even why Elizabeth was babysitting.
Well,
maybe we can get to that when we get to it. But it seemed like Young He wasn't really gone anywhere.
Well, she was going. They were going away for the weekend. She and Don.
All right.
Yeah.
About this time, Paige brings the giant Mercury Land Cruiser in for a pretty bumpy landing. She doesn't even slow down to go up over the driveway.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it was really typical. I liked it. And I wonder about Holly Taylor, if she's just getting to that place where she can drive, because I think she's. Well, maybe a few years ago, because I think she's a senior in high school or something.
Yeah, she's like 15.
No, she's. I think she just turned 18, actually, because on the Insider podcast, they said something about that she was 18 now, so they didn't have to worry about the child abuse laws for like yelling at her and everything.
But she's 15 in the show.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, in the show. Yeah, but I was wondering about Holly Taylor, if she was an experienced driver or not.
Well, by 18, she better be.
I didn't get my driver's license till I was 18.
Huh, that's weird.
My mother was really strict.
Well, Philip says, that was great. Now I'm going to go throw up. He's pretty funny. He's a pretty cool dad, I think.
I think so, too.
Paige tells him about the church's Ethiopia trip and how Pastor Tim likes seeing them all together as a family. They look more normal that way, Jamie.
Right. I liked that because, I mean, it's probably completely true, you know?
Well, it's probably true of any family.
I guess so.
You know, I don't know if that's maybe a pipe dream of Paige's, but I don't know.
I bet you, well, I mean, I would be willing to bet that that Paige, you know, would give anything for her family to be actually normal.
Right. It's a little bit of a manipulation. Like, let's be together because we'll look more normal.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if she was manipulating her dad. I don't think so. But I think that, you know, there was something in, you know, in that comment. There was a kind of a sadness in that comment because, you know, they used to be normal to her mind, and, you know, now they're not.
Yeah, she's a little bit of a manipulator. She's like, you know, this car's way too big. The Camaro would be much easier to learn on, you know.
Right. Well, yeah, that. I mean, but the other way, I don't think so. For that, where she was talking about being more normal, I don't think she had any stake in trying to get her parents to come to that dinner.
Yeah, you're right. Other than she was right. We should look as normal as possible because she's in the spy game now.
That's exactly right, yeah.
All right, we get the credits, of which I still want to say they're different every time because they do look damn different to me, but I can't say that as a fact.
I'm trying to notice it, and I'm not noticing it, so I don't know. I know that that the colors have changed. Like, the color scheme, I think, is different than last season, but I don't know. I can't.
Well, they're definitely different from last season. I'm thinking episode to episode.
No, I know. But I can't see anything other than that the color scheme has changed from last season.
Or we go to a racquetball game now with Stan, Philip and Stan. He wears Stan down. Philip's rejuvenated from his 7-month rest, sleeping better.
Yeah.
Just doing better. He's, overall, looks a little happier.
Yeah, hibernation, man.
Stan says, I should have been a travel agent. Kind of laments his job.
Yeah, and then he says, I should have been anything.
And Callie Rescue Me has broken up with him.
That's right.
Tori is her name.
Yes. Well, I don't know if she did the breaking or if he did the breaking, because he said, I don't know, she just, you know, I liked her. She just wasn't Sandra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stan has to get back to work, though, Jamie, so as not to piss off the Munchkins. Piss off the boss, I guess. The Munchkins will tell on him or something, or report back to the boss.
Yeah. And he doesn't allow them to be even 5 minutes late. That's crazy.
I didn't look up William Webster at all, and I know his name's popped up a couple times. So did you ever wiki him or look him up?
No, actually, I didn't. Did you say wiki him or...
Wiki him.
Oh.
Wiki him or look him up.
No, I didn't, because we talked about him a little bit, or else I did some reading about him. You know, he was the director of the FBI at that time. He's a real character. He's not like a gad. This is a real person. And he was apparently, you know, really strict. But that's all I can say about him.
So Stan tells Philip about Gad getting retired, forcefully retired maybe, and going on a long trip to Thailand. Do you think Gad will be part of future adventures with him being his name popping up in this conversation?
I don't know that we're done with Gad yet. I thought we would have been done, you know, last episode, and we were not. So I do wonder.
I wonder what could have happened in Thailand in 1983 that was important to the U.S. and Russia.
Let's see. Oh, you know, William Webster was director of the CIA as well as the FBI. Let's see.
Any other letters?
No.
All right, Elizabeth and Philip are at home, and they get a signal from William without it going through Gabriel. So here's your mystery about Gabriel. And they plan to meet William. And so Elizabeth sets it up by preparing Hans. Hans the killer, isn't that what you call him?
Hans the murderer.
Yeah, Hans the murderer for backup or bodyguard duty or whatever.
Yeah, whatever he does. I mean, he's just so awful. Odious.
So we see Philip's disguise now, Jamie, another new disguise. Some people say he looks maybe like Lenin or Stalin, but I say Freddie Mercury.
Huh, there you go.
Right on the heels of David Bowie, under pressure. Got to get the Freddie Mercury in there.
Well, I'll tell you what, you did. I mean, that's fantastic because he really did look like that.
And we didn't give Freddie Mercury a lick of credit for that song. He sings half that song.
You know, I said Queen, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's, you know, just the heart of all of that. And he certainly deserved a lot of credit. And we should have mentioned him by name.
Yeah, then later in the episode, we get the Major Tom reference. And Major Tom is loosely connected to Bowie. I mean, Major Tom in whatever that Bowie song was. Why is that? Why am I losing that name of that song?
I don't know. David Bowie.
Peter Schilling sang Major Tom, but Bowie, you know, Ground Control. Space Oddity.
Ground Control to Major Tom.
It's the same Major Tom. It's either Schilling was doing a... He did it later than Bowie, I think.
Well,
or, I don't know. I can't remember the timing. But they're related. It's the same. It's the Major Tom in both songs. Same person.
Oh, okay. Is he like a character? Like a fictional character?
Well, I think I can't remember which one was first. Whether it was Space Oddity or Schilling's song, but...
Oh, well, okay, so Space Oddity, so you're talking about 2001 Space Oddity?
No, Space Oddity was the song.
Oh.
I guess it was Bowie. Bowie did that way before. It was like 1970 or something.
Yeah, that has to be earlier, because like Major Tom, the song that played now was in the 80s. So, yeah, it would have to be if it were in this series. In fact, it would have to be 1983. Right down to the month that we're in.
So Bowie did it about this guy, the astronaut, being caught in space because of an accident, and then Schilling talked about it. And then, of course, Jamie, Gail Boetiker did his version of it.
Oh, Gail Boetiker, yes. Either Thailand or Korea or somewhere that he was there, and he did his karaoke version, very hammy. Karaoke version.
You might have just answered the gag question. Thailand, Jamie.
Well, Thailand actually got democracy in 1983.
Well, there you go. That's grounds for a Russian invasion.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, Philip meets with William, and we learn a few things now in their conversation. Martha is in Moscow, which totally defrauded all of my plans and predictions for Martha.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad she made it, though.
She's alive and free.
Yeah, which is not saying much, but kind of saying everything, I guess.
And William says, free. Can't remember what that feels like.
I know. That was so amazing. I loved William in the scenes because Philip said we took a break, and he said, a break? We can have those.
He's the perfect mope.
Yeah, I love him.
You could not cast a more accurate mope.
It's fantastic.
He's on a schedule now, Jamie. He's on 3-man teams. He's all kind of roped into his job.
Uh-huh.
And he asks Philip, where have you been?
Yes.
Philip tells him on a break. And now he's told both Stan and William this in this episode. Pretty interesting that they make a point of that. He's made it clear that he's been on a break from... whatever he's doing. And of course, Stan thinks it's travel agency, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess he has to make excuses to people as to why he hasn't been around very much.
Right. So William gives him an update. We've just got something new from Fort Detrick. It's a modified strain of the Lassa virus, causes fever and liquefies bones and organs.
Yeah, okay. So. Right. So there goes my theory about the biological agents that they're using on the Americans not being quite so potent.
Well, and then he asks, how close are you getting me into level four? So he, before, it wanted nothing to do with it. Now he's worried about the timeline for how soon he can get into it.
Okay, wait. I thought that it was in this scene that he said that. That he said that he was saying, what if we just what if we said that the mission failed? What if we just didn't take it? And then he said, I'm concerned about this. I don't think they should have it. And then he said, you know, I don't trust us.
He does say that. But yeah. He's also concerned with how close are you to getting me up into that level? Because either way, whether he wants to be there or not, that's an important question to him.
Right.
Because if you're getting me close, and I still don't want to go, I still want to know how close you're getting me to have to go in there.
Yes, that's what I think that was.
So it's just to go through it. Phillip says, well, we're making progress, and William congratulates him for pulling his agent. I'd like to make the right decision, too. And that leads to this whole point that... William says the last sample that he got was only so the Americans could make antidotes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're essentially making antidotes because they think the Russians are going to make this biochemical agent.
Yeah.
And then he says it's never enough for them, meaning like the center. Never enough for them. I don't trust us with this weapon.
Yeah.
And then Phillip says, do you trust the Americans with it?
Yeah.
And so William says something interesting here, Jamie, and I think this answers a lot of the whole thing with the freezer and the jar and the thermos and the threads on the thing. He says, right. No, I don't trust the Americans, but at least the threads on their frickin' containers work most of the time.
Right.
I think that's a comment on how the Americans are at least playing this military game with the right materiel and tools and protocols, and they're at least careful with what they're fucking doing. We're loose cannons.
Right. I mean, okay, so that is a thing. You know, I've had some interaction with the third world, and that's a characteristic of it. It's hard sometimes, depending on which part of the world you're in, which part of the third world you're in. It's hard to get quality goods. So much of that what they sell is just really, truly substandard. And that happens in poor countries. And, of course, you know, Russia was really poor then.
Well, besides this just being a strong comment on American technology being more reliable than Russian or Soviet technology, we're going to see evidence of this in this day after and the real life incident that the day after was kind of not focused on. But there was a real life incident that we hear about from Oleg. Later on.
Yes.
All right. So, sorry, I had to scroll up. Now I have to scroll back. All right. So, this is, they're watching the movie. It's a movie, right? Now, like, is it a TV movie or a regular movie the day after? It was on TV, so made right. for TV.
It was a made for TV movie. It was ABC Theater. You remember that? They had ABC Theater that they'd show on certain nights. And I think there are a few other channels that had that, network broadcast channels where they would show made for TV movies.
So it was November 30th, 1983, and we see they're all watching this. Stan and Matthew are over at the Jennings. Mm-hmm. William's watching it in his mopey apartment. Oleg and Tatiana suspiciously sitting on a bed together. I saw that. I'm like, what?
I'm sorry.
That was the first hint of like, well, they're a little friendly sitting together on a bed together somewhere.
See, I didn't see the bed, but I thought that they were oddly near each other and, you know, like sitting very close together.
Yeah, they were sitting on a bed somewhere.
Okay.
Well, now that's not much of a shock after we see what they end up doing.
Right.
Jamie, this movie. Oh, so we see Oleg and Tatiana, and then we see Arkady watching it. We see Don and Young Yi watching it.
Yep.
It's a long, very uncomfortable cut of the movie. Very long, very overly like, okay, I get it. This movie's horrible. Let's get past this, because it was like the bullet scene Killing Private Ryan, Saving Private Ryan, where they're walking through the water and everybody's getting shot. That scene looked like it took 40 minutes. You know, you wanted it to end.
Yes, yes. It's like you want to look away, but you can't look away. And when they pulled the camera, you know, back and they were showing the family, Paige was looking down. She couldn't watch.
By the way, Jamie, did you ever watch Deutschland 83?
No.
I think it's like the opposite of the Americans, the American people in Russia.
Oh, really?
Or maybe Berlin. It's a TV show, and they use the Major Tom clip, too. I forgot to say that.
Huh. That's fascinating.
All right. And there were some other, besides this movie, there were some other Russian and nuclear Holocaust movies that were really good movies that were way before The Day After. Have you ever heard of Failsafe?
No.
It's an awesome movie. Black and white, 1964. But both these movies were in 1964. Failsafe, Henry Fonda, some other people. Here, let me take a quick look and tell you. Should have had this already, sorry.
That's okay.
Failsafe, 1964 Cold War thriller by Sidney Lumet. A book written in 1962. It's about a bomber that gets through. Whenever there's a threat, the bombers go to condition blue, yellow, green, red, you know, ultimately, and then they attack if it really is a threat. Well, there's a false alarm. One bomber doesn't get the callback sign and goes in, and, you know, a melee ensues. You should watch the movie. I won't spoil it.
Okay.
It's really good. It's Larry Hagman. It's like Henry Fonda, Walter Matthau. Really, really good. You'll stay glued to your set watching this thing. And then the other one was Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, okay.
Peter Sellers. They make kind of a, and that's who's the Eyes Wide Shut guy? Who's that director?
Kubrick.
Yeah, he's the director of that.
Yeah.
Peter Sellers.
Super black humor.
Really, really good movie. George C. Scott, Keenan Wynn. Anyway, they're the same movie with two different slants. Like when, this one, an American bomber gets through, and then they have the decision, like, should we just send all the bombers in and just wipe them all out? Because there's going to be hell to pay if one gets through, and then they have to pay us back by attacking us, and just the whole drama. Mm-hmm. If you ever want to kill an evening, watch both those movies. They're just awesome, awesome movies.
Okay.
And they kind of reflect this real-life thing that, I don't know when we should talk about it, but it's interesting, though, that the so much of military strategy is like feint and deception, like even to the point of tricking the economy of your foe to overspend and overcommit. And that's kind of what Reagan did with the whole Star Wars initiative.
Yeah.
Like he told, like that was all fantasy. We never really had a Star Wars laser zapping thing. But he made the Russians go nuts trying to keep up with it. And then they eventually went broke. He ruined their economy because of that.
It's crazy. Brilliant, but crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how that war is fought. You know, there wasn't really ever a shot fired, but somewhere, too, along in the forums, I read something like Carl Sagan said, the arms race is like a room that's drenched in gasoline and two people sitting in chairs in the room. One's Russia, one's the U.S. And Russia has 7,000 matches and the U.S. has 9,000 matches.
Huh.
Why did they ever go beyond two matches?
Right. I mean, there's no need. But that is what has led to the reduction in nuclear arms.
Seems to. I mean, but we probably have way more than we probably ever need.
We have way more than we'll probably ever need, but we have less than we've ever had.
Well, not less than we've ever had. Less than we've...
Okay. Less than we had at the height of the Cold War.
Right. All right, so Philip and Elizabeth now talk. You know, so just let me get back on track here a little bit. Went way off track with those movies. So it's them watching, they're all watching the movie at different locations, all those different people. And then after that's over, Philip and Elizabeth talk kind of in their bedroom privately. And Philip says, what if this is the one time we don't report back? And Elizabeth just references, puts everything in perspective for him. They're making that poison for us. They dropped that bomb twice, which has a lot more impact if you think about it right after watching that movie.
Yeah.
You know, the Americans dropped the nuclear bomb twice in World War II on Japan. And it's pretty easy to realize the impact of that right after that movie.
That's right. I mean, and that movie was so frightening. You know, I can remember whichever one they showed in the 90s, I can remember people just being so affected by it, and myself, you know, just being so affected and just thinking exactly what Paige did. Like, this was a foregone conclusion that it was going to happen and that, you know, we would die, and hoping that we would die quickly instead of living and being so sick.
All you had to do is duck and cover.
All right.
Get under your desk.
Right. You remember that? Oh my God! They had like if you go to YouTube, you can see those crazy, what do they call those? Like educational videos that, you know, tell you duck and cover, and then you see the little kids getting under their desks as though that's going to help.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth says they dropped that bomb twice. That's why we're here. That's what we're doing this all for. And I'll go search the Don and Younghee's place and see if there's anything I can get on him. So now we see them. So I don't understand the details of this, Jamie. Maybe you can help me. Younghee, and we find out now Don is the husband. Really, for me, this is the first time. I didn't know if he was the brother or the cousin or whatever, but he's clearly... What? Yeah, we talked about this before, like when they had that dinner party five or six episodes ago. Remember we talked about who is who to who?
Right, yeah, yeah. But I knew by now that that was the husband.
Well, you're just so perceptive, Jamie.
No, I'm not. I just noticed it one day. But yes, I mean, yeah. So he is. It hasn't been super obvious, but yeah, he's the husband.
All right. Well, Younghee and Don are saying goodbye, are doing something in the driveway. She's leaving with him, and Patty is babysitting.
Right.
So what's the deal? Where are they all going? What's the reason for babysitting?
Okay, so I think probably what happened is Patty offered to babysit so that Younghee and Don could get away and have a little time together for themselves. And that, of course, was, you know, Elizabeth's way of getting time in the house because she wants to explore it and look for something that she could use to blackmail Don into doing what she needs.
So that later on when she pulls her caper with Don... She just knows that Younghee's obligated to do something else. She's not really out of town or something?
No. Those are two different things. Elizabeth searched that house the whole night until 6:15 in the morning and didn't find anything except that porn tape. And so she's failed in her mission to find something with which to blackmail him.
Yeah, I got all that. But I thought Younghee was leaving town, and so she knew she would have time with Don alone.
No. Don and Younghee went away for the weekend, and that was a whole separate occasion. And then when Elizabeth seduces Don, or fake seduces Don, Younghee is actually at a Mary Kay event.
She works for Mary Kay? I'm just kidding.
Oh.
I love it when you correct me.
What are you talking about? I'm not correcting you.
I know. All right, Jamie, these three little bumpkins are so damn cute. In the front yard, these three little kids, as they're saying goodbye to mom and dad, and Elizabeth's babysitting them. This bookending what Elizabeth is about to do is fairly horrendous, just showing this perfect little family. Oh, man. They hammer this point home just so eloquently with this little... cute little kids going to be together. Don's such a nice, clean cut, you know, straight as an arrow guy. Man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really awful. It's awful because, you know, she knows. And you can see the sadness in her face. You know, even when she's just standing out there in the yard with the kids, there's a sadness there.
Yeah.
I don't think she is enjoying deceiving them. And I think that you're right. I think, you know, from last episode, you were talking about the idea of friendship between Elizabeth and young He. And I think that Elizabeth really was, I think she really did like young He. I don't think she was, you know, acting necessarily.
This is the worst thing in Elizabeth's own mind that she's ever done. Worse than killing a guy by dropping a floor jack on him. Worse than anything. Worse than killing the old lady in the warehouse. This is the worst thing she's ever done. You're right. We can see it at several stages in her face. This front yard scene is one of them.
Right. And I don't know if she would say it's the worst thing she's ever done, but I do think that this whole situation has kind of, what do they call it? Like had a cumulative effect. It's accumulated, you know, within her mind and her spirit, all of the things that she's done. And I think that hurting people and manipulating people and ruining their lives, you know, takes a toll. And I think that's what we're seeing is that, you know, her sort of, you know, her place inside of herself where she can kind of tuck away the awful things that she does, that, you know, compartmentalizing those things. I think it's getting full.
Well, I think that's true. I think there's definitely a cumulative effect and that's all adding up. But I think this is her biggest sin in her mind.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I could see why you would think that.
By the way, Jamie, I could have stayed in a nicer house like this on my recent trip to Washington, D.C.
Yeah,
you got stuck in an Airbnb that I talk all about with Michelle on our Scathing Tweets podcast, if you want to hear it. It was quite an adventure.
Well, I actually like your Scathing Tweets podcast. And speaking of podcasts, I've been listening to Michelle's podcast that she does with her other Mike. What is it called again? I can't think of the name of it. Tribal Rant. I've listened to their Americans podcast, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, they're good. They got a good take on stuff.
Yeah.
And, of course, I haven't done a podcast with Mike, but we've done a few with Michelle. And you and I have done a few with Michelle. But Mike's really good, too. Mike adds, like, the tactical stuff in, which is pretty good. They do one on The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead and The Walking Dead. Okay. But they talk about the zombie one, too.
Yeah, that's what I like about Mike is that he adds kind of that historical and military kind of perspective.
He's kind of a hound dog, too. He's after all the women in all these shows.
I noticed that.
Martha was his girlfriend, then Elizabeth was his girlfriend, then the girl in The Walking Dead was his girlfriend.
Yeah, Mike has got several hobbies, I think.
Michelle better keep that boy chained up.
That's right.
All right, so listen to that Scathing Tweets if you want to hear about a funny adventure by this Mike on a trip to D.C.
I will. I'll listen to it because I haven't heard that episode yet.
That was the D.C. trip that is funny that a D.C. trip, Washington, D.C. trip, ruined our American schedule for our podcast, and I came back all sick from it.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Full of laughs, Jamie. You'll love it.
It's irony. Yeah, you poor guy. But, you know, there was a podcast, actually, on NPR. There's this podcast they do called Brain Science, and they actually did one on Airbnb and the kinds of unconscious bias that people have when they are either operating a B&B or you know, trying to book one.
Huh. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what people think when they allow people into their homes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think you've got to be a little bit crazy to do that, or else a very good person who can defend yourself. You know, but I don't know. I don't know if I could do it.
So, Liz. So, Jamie, what's your name? Jamie.
Jay.
There was a feedback comment about Elizabeth, how she's really past, like she's hypocritical. How can she not understand how hurting people, like, she's trying to protect the greater good, but she's hurting people. She's hurting good people to protect the greater good.
Right.
So she's hypocritically defending her, you know, we're doing this all for the greater good, but she's ruining all the lives of all these other people.
Okay, so, you know, I can see why someone might think that. But in fact, Elizabeth has a duality that she projects. She says things like that about how they, you know, they're about the greater good and they want to, you know, make the world a better place and all this stuff. When in fact, she is a spy for the Soviet Union. She's not an idealist person in the sense that she wants to save the world. She's an ideologue who is absolutely devoted to her country and her mission. You know, and you see this in this episode with what she does, what she says to Philip, and what she does to Young He and Don's marriage.
She's very robotic. She's very soldier-like. Like, I've got an order. I'm going to fulfill this order.
Right.
Do you think she would serve the center over having some harm come to one of her children?
I don't know, because, you know, we talked in detail about what Elizabeth did to Paige last episode. I think that she may, you know, I think there was a part of what she did to Paige that was really about being upset with Paige and wanting to protect the family from this thing that Paige has set in motion by her terribly ill-thought-out action that she did. But I remember the episode last season where Elizabeth took Paige to meet Elizabeth's mother. And in that episode, Paige asked her mom, would you ever do this to me? Like, would you ever let this happen to me? Meaning, you know, to be a spy. And Elizabeth just said something quick like, oh, that'll never happen. Or, you know, you shouldn't think about that or something like that, where, you know, she kind of brushed it off to Paige. But she knew that at the time. And she was the one, you know, between herself and Philip, who was willing to turn Paige, you know, and originally when Claudia first came to them with this idea. And so I don't know. I think that Elizabeth attacking Paige the way that she did last episode, it kind of draws a little bit of a line there, you know, from whatever portion of that was about Russia.
Do you think Elizabeth would sacrifice her relationship with Philip to please the center?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to either. I would answer the same way. I don't know. She may do something. You got to send Henry in. It's a suicide mission. I don't absolutely say she would not do that.
I agree with you.
It's scary.
Yeah, I mean, I could see her reasoning that out and, you know, being brokenhearted about it and, you know, letting it ruin her for a while, but saying, you know, that, you know, what else, what better thing could you spend your life on, you know, lose your life about than, you know, helping the motherland or some crap.
Yeah, job's a job. All right, Jamie, we get a makeout scene now. And I got to tell you, I thought this was going to be Paige and Matthew, hottest pistols after the nuclear movie. But no, it's Oleg and Tatiana.
Right.
Tatiana looked pretty good, but I could have used a lot less Oleg with his shirt off. A lot less.
All right. So if Oleg had been playing, like, you know, racquetball with Philip, who, by the way, was looking pretty darn good himself, you know, with Philip and Stan, that would have been one thing. But I don't have any use for a groaning and moaning Oleg and, you know, in bed with some chick. It was just gross.
With a Tatiana on top of him?
Yeah. I couldn't do it. That, like, ugh. Even the noise was just awful.
I could probably suffer a few minutes of Tatiana on top of me. But Tatiana talks about how she was always quiet during her sex in a poor, scared household. And Oleg was a wild man in his rich private house.
Did you hear what she said? Like, what she actually said? She said that she and her boyfriend had to be quiet as mice because they had to wait. They had to wait until the family was out of the house. And then she said all of them, which sounded to me like she meant all of the several families that were.
I think she did mean that.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know if she meant, you know, like all of the individual family members or all of the several that were in the place. And so it was just really, it was crazy sounding, and it was kind of funny, you know, for the moment. And, you know, and she was talking about, you know, walls being thin and, you know, and then she said to Oleg, you know, that he didn't have that way. You know, and then Oleg says, you know, we were lucky. I know that.
Well, then Oleg tells her the story about the event in Russia. And here's that story, Jamie. Forgive me. This is like almost directly from Wikipedia. But somebody in the lieutenant colonel in the Russian army, Soviet Air Defense Forces, Stanislav Yevgrafovich Petrov, on September 26, 1983, right after the Soviets shot down the Korean Airlines Flight 007, of all ironic numbers, was on duty and got an early warning system, just like Failsafe and Dr. Strangelove, reported that a missile had gotten through their defenses and was followed by a couple other missiles. And it turned out to be a false alarm. But before he knew it was a false alarm, he guessed that it was a false alarm. Like, why would they only send five missiles and not a whole fleet of frickin' missiles? And he did not launch the retaliatory nuclear strike back to the U.S.
Right.
And had he done that, I didn't even ever know this. Had he done that, there would have been a nuclear event in 1983 in September.
Right.
And this one guy, using his sanity and his breaking the rules of his job as a, you see this, it gets to a certain point, you've got to react. That's why these movies are so good. Both Failsafe and Dr. Strangelove address this very thing. We can't get the callback code. Like in Failsafe, they can't get the callback code. So the president is Henry Fonda, literally gets on the phone with the plane. He's talking to the pilot. I am the president. Do not do this. It's a mistake. It's an error in the technology of the system. And the pilot's trained at a certain point not to let anybody, you can't trust the voice. It's mm-hmm. so freaking good, man. You just got to watch it. But anyway, this guy, Stanislav Petrov, breaks the rules and stops the retaliatory attack and essentially saves the, I don't know if he saves the world, but he certainly saves a lot of people from getting wiped out in nuclear, and call it at least an event, maybe a war.
Yeah, no, I think he definitely saves the world. I don't think that's hyperbole. You know, if you launch a nuclear attack at America, you know, we don't play with things like that. We're going to bomb the hell out of you and anybody in your vicinity. And if it's nuclear, then it's going to travel the world. Everybody will die, or at least, you know, there won't be too many people left. And they'll all be sick if they're left.
They address this in the movie. I think it's the Failsafe movie. They say, like, the Russian guys finally say, okay, it's a mistake. I understand it. One plane's going to get through. It's going to hit its target. We need to take out one of your targets. It's only fair. It's so good, dude. So they have to deal with that. Like, does the U.S. just say, okay, if we're going to take out X city, you can take out X city in the U.S., and we're calling it even. It's so interesting. But fortunately, in our real life, this does not happen, and this Petrov guy kind of disarms the whole situation. But that's what Oleg was referring to, a real-life event a couple months before, or maybe a few weeks before. It was November, and this was September, so it was maybe 4 or 5 weeks before.
Yeah, yeah. He said they talked to his dad, and his dad told him this story.
And you can tell Tatiana's just horrified.
Yeah, and, you know, from light what did he say? Light bouncing off the clouds.
Right. Well, that's the whole, threads are shitty on the containers argument. It's like, we got a shitty, you know, interpretation of what's a real missile.
Yeah. And he says our technology is so far behind.
Right. All right. So now Elizabeth's searching the He house. What I looked far and low, long and high, whatever, far and wide. What the hell is Young He and Don's last name?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm just calling it the He's, the He house, Young He and Old He. But Elizabeth's searching their house now. And is this scene, the scenes of that are intercut with Philip taking Paige on her driving, her next driving episode. Elizabeth searches all night, you're right, all night to look for something on Don. And I'm going to ask you about this, the math on this too, Jamie. What's their plan with Don? What are they going to do, blackmail him? Okay, I got more questions for you, though, so don't feel all like you're off the hook.
Okay.
Well, Paige and Philip talk while they're driving or while they're in the car. Paige wants it to all end quickly with all of them together if there's a nuclear holocaust. And, of course, this prompts her dad to say, well, don't, you know, let's hopefully we won't have to worry about this. I think about it sometimes, but let's not worry about it.
It was in the kitchen. Did she say it in the kitchen and again?
Maybe. The they're about to go on this test drive in the Camaro.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So you skipped over. Did you skip over Pastor Tim?
Over who?
Pastor Tim.
No.
Doing his. Okay.
I don't skip over anything.
Oh, sorry.
I'm a podcast professional. All right. So, yeah, you're right. They might still be in the kitchen. They're going over homework is probably what they are. And then he says, all right, screw the homework. We're going for another test drive in the Camaro. He cheers her up. Gets her off this nuclear thing. But while they're doing that, they're intercut with this with the scenes of Elizabeth searching Don's office. So in Don's office, Jamie, she finds a bunch of VHS movies in the He library.
Well, that's in their house. That's like in their living room. And then she goes to she works her way over to the office. I think she starts in the bathroom, right?
Yeah. But I'm trying to get to is the titles of these movies. I actually wrote them down.
Oh, okay.
Did you notice some of them? Rocky.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Sophie's Choice.
Yeah.
12 Chairs. I didn't know what that was.
I don't either.
Patton.
Uh-huh.
Giant. Have you seen these movies, Jamie?
Only a few of them. I've seen Rocky. I have seen little pieces of Sophie's Choice, which I think is probably the most depressing movie ever. And Patton, I've seen pieces of that.
Yeah, they're all really good movies. Patton's really good. Giant, really good. James Dean. Young Doctors in Love. I guess it's Woody Allen?
I don't know. I haven't heard of it.
Alien.
Okay, now that's a classic.
Sigourney Weaver. And then there's a VHS on wine, probably wine tasting skills, and tennis lessons. Uh-huh. And there's only one blank white case. She pulls that out, and that was kind of a fake out because behind that were some more videos. And what looked like a normal promo cover, VHS cover slip, she finds the movie with the porno on it.
Right, and it's got the label torn off on the VHS thing, like where normally the label would be pasted on to the actual, you know, like the cassette part. The label's torn off.
So do you think that was Young He's collection or Don?
I think it was Don.
Oh, yeah, that's the easy way out. She searches other things. She does get to his office, searches through his Rolodex, various files and stuff, his calendar, under drawers.
She even crawls under the desk and she's looking for secret compartments.
Inside books, behind photographs in their frames.
Yep. She's looking everywhere.
And then she turns off the lamp. Like you said, she's been there all night. It's like now 6 in the morning.
That's right.
And then she goes to work. God, she's got to go to the travel agency. She's all cranky on the phone at the travel agency.
Yeah. She's, like, really upset. And I'm sorry.
Philip asks, he's really calm. How'd it go? And she says, I didn't find anything.
Right.
So here's another mystery, Jamie, or the mystery. Philip says, you don't have to do it to her. And right. Elizabeth says, I don't know if there's another way, and I'll be okay, don't worry. But let's think about this strategy. If it is blackmail, like if it works, say she blackmails Dawn, gets all the level 4 secrets she needs, or passwords, or codes, or whatever, keys, door channel locks, whatever. And then nobody's the wiser, because if she's blackmailing him, she would have no reason to tell Young He. Only right. Dawn would know.
Right.
Unless they then have to kill Dawn or something after they work him.
No, I don't think that would be the case at all, because he loves his family and he loves his wife. There's no way that he would, you know, if they threatened, you know, unless he were really honest and he just wanted to tell Young He and then destroy his family, you know, for the sake of honesty. No, I think he'd be a really good patsy. I think he'd be somebody that they could blackmail and get away with. That there wouldn't be any problem or need to, you know, cut off any loose ends or anything like that. I think that that it, you know, it was a terrible idea, because, you know, I mean, it destroyed this family.
It wouldn't destroy them, though. If blackmail was successful, Dawn would keep it quiet. Elizabeth would keep it quiet, and only Dawn would know.
Yeah, I don't know if he'd ever be able to deal with it, though. You know,
unless, like, Elizabeth then just bows out, like, okay, I won't ever mess with you and Young He again, because you won't need to, because right. they'll have gotten their access. Okay, so what if he freaks out and kills himself? Like, he's dishonored. He seems very honorable. And he's got that in their Korean-Asian, like, honor, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, that's what a proud Korean, that proud Korean shame. It's really the only right thing to do. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so I know that in Japanese culture it's like that. I don't know about Chinese culture or other Asian countries, if they have that same issue, but I would venture to say that people of certain kinds of character, you know, and cultures that have a strong tie to family and tradition, you know, I think that a person might feel that way. And he's got to be so very, very ashamed, and he's got to feel, you know, really upset and confused, because he of course he doesn't remember anything, because nothing happened. And so how much worse does it make it that it's a mystery to him as well, you know, and he really loves his wife. And, you know, now he's, you know, to his own mind, he's done this awful thing.
Well, and plus he's probably, I'm assuming that he's going to think, because I'm the man, this was my fault, and I was the cause of this.
I'm sure.
Okay, or the other scenario is the blackmail, Elizabeth presents them with blackmail and it totally fails and everybody just finds out, and then Young He confronts Elizabeth, which would be the much more interesting of the two.
Right. Well, that won't happen, but I agree that it would be really interesting, but yeah, that, I mean, that would never happen. I think probably because of Elizabeth's experience in manipulating people, she probably knows exactly what to do. It was, to me, it was fascinating to see how she sort of took command over that whole scenario. She knew how to get him over there. She knew how to get him, you know, to come up to her apartment. She knew how to make him stay. You know, it was fascinating to me.
Yeah, but before she did that, she resorted to that. What if in his office she found that he had heroin and he was like a heroin addict or something horrible that she could have used instead of the sex?
Right.
She blackmails him. He agrees to it. Everybody's quiet. There's no reason.
Well, that would have been one thing. That would have been one thing if she had been able to blackmail him with something about stolen money, or I don't know, you know, some other kind of thing that people do. That would have been probably a lot better result for everyone all the way around, because his guilt wouldn't have invaded his
relationship with his wife.
But going into all this, Elizabeth knows that this is the end of it for her and young he. She yes. says as much to Philip. I'm going to, you know, miss her, or Philip says you don't have to do it. He knows she's putting an end to this relationship.
Right. Well, she's going to burn everything to the ground because.
But if you blackmail somebody, you're not burning it all to the ground. You're threatening to, and you're hoping it doesn't get burnt to the ground.
Well, okay. So, from her perspective, this is burning everything to the ground because she has not only hurt these people, you know, she has ruined her relationship with Young He. She can't go back and be her friend. How?
Yeah, how?
Because she's done this to Don, and you don't know if Don's going to go and tell her. And then Elizabeth, from her own conscience, probably won't be able to look Young He in the face because she really does like her. It's like what you said last episode. They're friends.
But okay. And now, I'm not understanding this though. If you blackmail Don and it's successful, that means he's agreeing to do what you want him to do because he doesn't want this to come out. That's the blackmail.
Right.
And if nothing comes out, she has to stay friends with Young He because she's already, it'd be suspicious not to be friends with her.
That's correct.
So how is she losing Young He?
She's losing Young He because Don would never be able to look at her the same way again. He would act strange because of the shame and everything. He's not a person who can just do something like what he thinks he did and then just go on as though everything is normal. You know, I think his guilt might drive him to tell her regardless.
Well, that's what I'm hoping happens. I hope Young He finds out and she confronts Elizabeth.
Yeah, I don't know if that's really the story. I don't know if that is, cogent.
That is the whole story, though. That's the whole story of this whole series, I think, is what people are willing to do and the repercussions of what should be important to them. And I think what should be important to Philip and Elizabeth is, like, they went in as soldiers, they created a family, and now their family is what should be important. And whatever they do outside of the family that is affecting the family, that's the story. Not whether or not they get enough papers to get into a code and get a weapon, and that's secondary, I think.
Well, I mean, I think you're right that it's more about the human relationships. I think that's right. I think that the extent that we have seen the point was actually illustrated as much as it needed to be by seeing Elizabeth feeling really sad and really heartbroken about what she had done to her friend.
Yeah, it's the mirror of Philip and Martha. Young He is Elizabeth's Martha.
Yeah,
she loses her. She's afraid of losing her, and Philip lost his Martha, and she's going to lose her Young He. And she did this terrible thing to her or her family, just like Philip did that to Martha.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. I was listening to the Insider podcast, the Panoply Insider podcast for Slate, and they were talking about this at episode 8 and saying that Elizabeth also has her cracks. She's just been slower to the breaking point. She's slower getting to the breaking point than Philip. And I couldn't agree more. I think they portray that very well because, you know, all last season, Philip was really just on the edge. And, this season we're seeing that Philip has kind of gone over the edge. He's hanging on by a thread. But Elizabeth is there. She's right at the edge. And, you know, I think this may have pushed her right over.
So Philip meets William now in the park, and Philip says, we're going to move forward. We have not told Gabriel yet. It's better if it comes from you. So the secret about this new super-duper organ-melting bio-agent is going to come. It's better if it comes from William to the center.
You know, I thought when they brought that disease up, that illness, I thought it was going to be Ebola. Because it kind of sounds like Ebola, but maybe Ebola is not as bad as this thing. But the whole thing about, you know, your blood coming out through your skin and your organs, melting. It's just, oh, God.
Again, if you want to hear my Airbnb adventure and my illness, go to Scathing Tweets and listen to it. Pretty good stuff.
I'm telling you, I really like your Scathing Tweets podcast.
Thanks, Jamie. You're a good homer.
No, I'm not. I really like it.
I appreciate it, you saying that.
You're welcome.
Philip says, if you didn't want anyone to find out, why did you tell me? And William says, it's a big decision to make on your own. Mm-hmm. Actually, Jamie, just like that Russian Save the World guy, he made that decision on his own.
Yeah, yeah. And can you imagine? Can you imagine the pressure that that man must have felt? And that's great. I'm glad you said that, because it hadn't occurred to me that there was a parallel there. But yeah, William, he's actually really, really astute about that, because, you know, it is. It's a huge decision to make on your own. But you know what I noticed this episode? This is the first time ever in the history of this series that every character who's involved, every Russian character, is talking about the center and talking about their mission and having serious doubts about whether, you know, it's worth it. And even Elizabeth, with her, you know, arguing with Philip about, you know, saying this is why we're here, after she did what she did, she was really, really destroyed by that.
So Elizabeth sets her Dawn plan into motion now, Jamie. Calls from a payphone. My boyfriend left me high and dry on a date. I don't have any money and I'm stuck. She asks for Young Hee, which is actually very convincing.
Yeah.
And knowing that Young Hee's not there.
Right.
And these scenes are intercut with Philip and Paige, and Pastor Tim and Alice. And by the way, Alice looks like she's going to give birth to several loads of laundry in that.
That was so crazy. I don't know how they managed to make her look that huge. It was comical.
It was overly pregnant, right?
You know, sure.
This is the conversation with Philip and Pastor Tim. And them getting along, I'm still not convinced that they could ever get along.
No, Philip, that whole relationship hinges on Philip's ability to act and not react.
Yeah, Tim saying, Paige seems sad and burdened. I'm concerned about this. And Philip just says she's a teenager. Philip should be saying, back off, pal. Like he did that one time. He backed him way off.
Yeah.
And then Tim says, Kelly O'Coin, our buddy from, he's on that other podcast a lot. Right. I'd like to sit down with you all when I'm back from Ethiopia. Like, dude, back the fuck off.
You're not our family counselor. I want to punch you in the face.
So we cut back to Elizabeth and Dawn. She invites him in to move something heavy, the old girl trick that has happened to me. Oh. And the slope gets really slippery fast, Jamie. And you can tell, like before, she's regretting it. She's the look on her face on the phone and the look on her face in the car.
Yep.
She knows she's sliding into bad things. She tries the wine with him. Hey, try this wine. I got it for a friend, and I can't tell if it's any good.
Got it for my brother's birthday.
She drugs it before she gives him his glass.
Yep.
Okay, this is where Philip and Paige are checking on the homework, and they do the Camaro.
You know what my question is? This is one of those tropes. Every time somebody drugs somebody by dropping some sort of pill into their drink, number one, the pill completely disintegrates and you can't see little particles in there or anything. And number two, the person never smells or tastes the drug that's in their drink.
Yeah, I'm buying this, though. And that she made it look like a powder, not just a pill that had to wait to dissolve.
Right, but there's no little...
You're right. There's no sediment of it or anything.
Right. And he looks at it because he's looking at the color of the wine. It's just crazy to me. And it always works out that way. Whenever somebody drugs somebody's drink, they never taste it and it tastes weird. They don't ever see any little particles. It's just always perfect.
You know what they did, though? They set this up really well, because they made, in that episode 5 or 6 episodes ago, they made Dawn a wine snob. And you know, yes, she bought like some really good wine, and you know, he's like, oh yeah, I'll try that. So exactly, she could have put a freaking half quart of 10W40 in there and he probably would have tried it.
Okay, so they just a little side note, a little tangent. They've done some studies recently about wine snobs and wine connoisseurs, and they found, and with regular people, and they found that, you know, the whole thing about if you put expensive wine in a cheap bottle and if you put cheap wine in an expensive bottle, that people react to it in the way that they perceive that it should be. But this study actually proved that people not only think that it's better, their brains actually light up. Like, they've done brain scans on people while they're tasting this stuff, and their brains light up as though they are really tasting something that's better, no matter what the quality is.
Right. And the other flip side of that is they take no labels and just put it into glasses. People just like what they like, and half the time they like the cheaper wine better than the expensive wine.
Crazy.
I know. There's lots of wine. I live in Sonoma County, California, and there's tons of wine snobs here.
Do you like wine?
I love wine.
What do you, have like a favorite? Do you like red, white? Do you have a favorite kind or anything?
It has to be at least $80 a bottle, Jamie. I'm sorry. Yeah, I like red. I like red wines mostly.
What's your favorite red?
I don't have a favorite. I like, but you can find like a $14 bottle of wine that's really good.
Yeah, I think you're right. I matter of fact, I know this girl who's like a wine guru, and she's just a champion of Screwtop wine that's like $10. And she says, you know, you can actually find really, really good wine that's in a Screwtop bottle and doesn't cost much money.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So Patty and Don continue to drink. He's getting woozy now, and they're talking, they're kind of joking around, talking about past boyfriends and girlfriends, and she kisses him. Holy crap, Jamie, I don't think I could have resisted this caper. Really good wine. I got freaking Elizabeth kissing me. I don't know. It was that slope was very slippery.
Well, Don could resist, and he was trying to get up and leave, but Elizabeth had the home field advantage.
Yeah, and the physical... physical medical results of the pill or whatever she put in there were keeping him down.
Yeah, her own little biological weapon.
All right, so we got a couple quick cuts between Paige and Philip in the Camaro. Elizabeth and Don, she's moving his fainted body or his whatever passed out body and undressing him. Paige and Philip in the driveway, then in the street with the car behind her, she freaks out a little bit and Philip just says, chill out, just let him pass you.
Mm-hmm.
And then Elizabeth undresses herself and lays in bed next to Don. And now this is the Major Tom soundtrack, and it was perfectly synced up as they do in this show with music, perfectly synced up to the events it was under.
Yes, that's right. They do that very well.
Don wakes up from the fake sex scene. Paige gets home. Camaro's perfectly safe, right as... Peter Schilling says, coming home, and Major Tom.
Mm-hmm.
And Don goes home in shame and despair after thinking what he has done with Elizabeth.
Yep.
And Jamie, do you think he noted the bottle of wine, you know, the label for future reference?
Probably.
I got to get me some more of that.
That was delicious. Yeah. Right,
so now at the Jennings house, Henry's playing video. Paige tells everyone she got to drive the Camaro. Or maybe she tells Elizabeth, but she kind of says it out loud.
And she was so disappointed because her mother didn't react the way she should have.
No, she just has a headache, wants to go lay down.
Yeah.
She's wrecked. She's wrecked by this whole thing.
Yes. And Elizabeth really causes Paige to be concerned. You can see the worried look on Paige's face and maybe a little touch of disappointment that her mother didn't react with excitement.
Maybe. But she knows they're up to deeper games than I'm riding a Camaro.
Yeah, which I think is why she just turns around and goes into the, you know, game room or game area with Henry when he asks her to come back to the video game.
Just to escape from it for a minute?
Well, just because she's accepting that that's normal now.
Well, Philip's comforting Elizabeth in their bedroom now, kind of in private, and he kind of holds her hand, and Elizabeth says, "I'm going to miss her." So this is the mysterious part to me. Like, if it's blackmail, she's got to keep up fronts for a little bit while longer, but I'm going to miss her. That's like Martha getting on the plane to Cuba. She's lost her Martha here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what it is.
All right, it'll be interesting to see how this cheating relationship has to get out and how the blackmail of it all works or doesn't work.
Well, I don't think that we're going to see any detail about that. I think that this was the caper. I think it's done.
Well, no, it's not done. They have to get into level 4.
Yes, but I'm talking about the results, like the fallout and, you know, all that family bit. I don't think we're going to see very much of Young Heat or Don again.
Oh, I do. I think they've teed this up for a massive Young Hee and Elizabeth confrontation.
Okay.
They better. I mean, if they don't.
But that's not...
You're just going to see William in level 4? Okay, I've got it. It's like, you know, he brings back a chicken with some sort of... I don't know. I think there's repercussions that we have to see from this.
Okay, so if we're going to talk about that... Then we have to talk about Juice Jar, that crazy Juice Jar guy. He was supposed to get his comeuppance, right? Like, Elizabeth should have, like, murdered him, but nothing happened, you know? He ran away with some chick.
I know. That guy's a tertiary character compared to Young Hee. We'll never see that guy again.
Well, which is a shame, because I still want to know what's in that jar.
I know you do. You're from the South. You're putting some pretty badass moonshine in there.
I want to know that the writers of the show owe it to us as the public, the viewing public. I need to know what was in that jar.
No, he's got the money and he ran off with some woman. He's down in
Florida.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pensacola, probably. All right, I don't know, Jamie, but that's it for 409.
Well,
and next week we have the Munchkins that we heard about already in this the day after 409. So, any final thoughts before we sign off, Jamie?
I think that this season, regardless of this horrible episode, is probably the strongest season of the Americans so far, including last season, which was pretty strong. I'm looking forward to the next few episodes. I think that we may have a lot of surprises in store, and I'm hoping to see William, a lot more of William. I really hope that he continues as a side character. I really like him.
We got to get our FBI mail robot pal back on too, because I can't remember if it was this one or the one before this, where Gad was like, "I hated that male robot. He was like, this is the male robot."
Really?
I want to get that male robot's opinion on that.
All right.
But next week is Munchkins, which we now know are William Webster's little narc agents that report on everybody being late. And
yeah, they talk like him. They dress like him.
They don't dress like Munchkins?
No, Stan said they talk like Webster and they dress like Webster.
They don't represent the Lollipopkin?
I don't think so.
All right, let's figure some of this out, Jamie. So next after that is Dinner for Seven.
Okay.
Any guesses on that?
All right, Dinner for Seven. So Philip, Elizabeth, Paige, and Henry make four, and...
Stan, Sandra, and Matthew. Perfect.
I don't know. Maybe.
And then after that, a Roy Rogers in Franconia.
Hold on a minute. Claudia, Gabriel, Philip, Elizabeth, Oleg, Tatiana, and Arcady. That's seven.
And why would they ever be together?
I don't know.
And you think they're at a Roy Rogers restaurant in Franconia, Maryland?
Yeah, maybe.
And then finally, it ends on 4/13 with persona non grata.
Oh, boy.
All right, we're in this is a fool's errand. As is most of our podcast material.
That's all right.
How do people reach you to present you with answers to these fascinating questions?
I'm on Twitter, and I'm at WordGirly.
And I'm at Scathing Tweets. And as we mentioned, we have a podcast feed, Scathing Tweets. So anyway, listen to us, report back to us, give us answers to these many questions that we've presented.
And check out Mike and Michelle's podcast. Okay, so we've got two Mike and Michelle's podcasts, the Scathing Tweets podcast, and also the Tribal Rant podcast.
Yeah, the Mike and Michelle are on Tribal Rant. They have a Survivor, they have the Americans, and they have the Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And I think they have some others, too.
Yeah, I think they do have some more, but those are the main ones that I've heard mentioned. And, yeah, I mean, they're really, really entertaining. They're really good.
Yeah, I never listen to them. I just see their...
You're so full of it.
No, I'm kidding. They're good. All right, Jamie. So till next week on Munchkins, I'm going to say goodnight.
Good night, Mike. This is Ground Control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. Major Tom to Ground Control. I'm stepping.